Hi, welcome to the podcast, The Socially Inspired Investor, where you can expand your knowledge of rewarding investment strategies and address environmental and socially responsible investing alternatives with important insights from experts in the field. I'm Pat O'Neill. These programs feature ESG, environmental, social, and governance stories in focus, and deep dive discussions with notable people in the industry. This time the topic, a new era in company reporting. What does it mean? Also featured in companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest at sociallyinspiredinvestor.com. A growing number of companies are adopting more sustainability and ESG policies and reporting on their performance related to everything from the environment to social issues to be more transparent. So how are they doing? What are the benefits to investors? And why should we believe them? Here to talk with us about that today is Tamara Close, founder and managing partner of Close Group Consulting. Welcome, Tamara. Thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Tell us more about Close Group Consulting and your role there.
Sure, absolutely. So Close Group Consulting has been around now for about 5 years. We work with investor clients, so asset managers and asset owners, as well as corporate clients, so publicly listed and privately held. And we help them integrate ESG across their firm's strategy. As opposed to some other sustainability consultants out there, we really understand the investor lens. So everyone at Close Group Consulting comes from the investment side. And so we can really bring that perspective to our corporate clients.
Do you feel optimistic that many companies overall are making progress in developing and reporting on their sustainability efforts?
I do. I'm very optimistic. And not just because that's the industry that I work in. I really do feel that we've moved exponentially forward. One of the reasons is just how many players we now see getting involved across every segment of the capital markets now. And really the depth and breadth of those getting involved is very, very impressive. When you look at ESG, we're seeing it now at every point in the financing lifecycle of a firm. So we're seeing venture capital firms getting involved, private equity firms, private debt firms, and then leading to, you know, pre-IPO, looking at ESG, and then on earnings calls and quarterly calls for listed companies, we're seeing ESG more and more being spoken about. And then tectonic shift, I would say, in investors' attitudes. 3 or 4 years ago, investors were asking the question, why do we need to do this? And now they're asking, how can we do this? And, you know, we've also seen an exponential shift in increase in the number of ESG jobs or sustainability related jobs. And the compensation for those jobs has gone up quite a bit across the spectrum. So at companies, at investors, and also at policymakers. So these are some of the things that make me more optimistic.
You mean ESG jobs at companies themselves and at investment firms too?
Exactly. Heads of ESG, we're seeing this more and more in job descriptions for analysts, for portfolio managers. And then at the companies, we're seeing chief sustainability officers, heads of ESG as well. And not just focused in the investor relations department, but really at the board and executive level.
You've said that 2021 was pivotal for companies managing and reporting their ESG strategies. Why is that?
I mean, one of the most major events, I guess you could say, that happened in 2021 was COP26. So that was in November of last year.
COP26, that's the climate change conference, COP standing for Conference of the Parties. Can you explain what that's all about?
Sure. This is a conference that has now gone on for 26 years, and it joins the major global economies, and they come together to speak about climate change. COP26 was a major year because we were looking at economies or countries' commitments to the Paris Agreement, which was in 2015, and to see how they were managing their economies towards their commitments to keep global warming under 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2050. What we saw coming out of COP26, basically that the direction of travel on climate now is just clearer than ever. So for investor clients, we saw immense commitments to net zero investment portfolios flows and strategies. 130 trillion of assets under management for investor clients have now been committed to net zero portfolios by 2050. And 2050 may seem quite a ways off, but there's also targets for 2030. And it's basically about decarbonizing portfolios by 2030. So that will have an immense impact on the different portfolios that are held within investors' strategies.
What kind of sustainability evidence do you look for with your clients?
So there's really two things that we look for. So initially, we'll see if they've done internally a materiality assessment. And from that, I mean, have they looked at and identified what are those financially material ESG issues for them as a firm? So these can be industry specific, but they're also idiosyncratic. So meaning that they are relevant to the business model of the company. And we can certainly, of course, help companies do that. And then the second thing we look for is, do they have a plan? So you're looking at these ESG issues. They can be risks for a company. They can also be opportunities. So do they have a plan to either mitigate or manage these risks? And do they have a plan to leverage the opportunities? So those are the two initial things that we look at. And then to know if this will be successful or not depends really on two things. And one is that support from the top, so from the board and executive management. And also, has this been aligned somehow within the compensation structure of both the executives and at that board level?
So you mean how compensation depends to some degree on how well those executives and the firms are doing with ESG and sustainability?
Yes. So compensation metrics aligned to either the sustainability performance of the firm or the implementation of sustainability initiatives at the firm.
Uh-huh. There are obviously some countries and companies much further along than others with their sustainability efforts. Are the ones that are lagging behind learning from those that are more advanced, and are they feeling more pressure to get on the bandwagon?
Absolutely. I mean, if they haven't felt the pressure yet, they will definitely feel the pressure going forward. When we see banks committing to net zero loan portfolios, when we see the large global investors committing to net zero portfolios, public markets and private markets. So for privately held firms, we have private equity firms, private debt firms as well, committing to reduce at least the emissions in their portfolios. There'll be quite a significant impact on, if not the sources of capital, but also the cost of capital for some of these companies.
Well, what gets measured gets managed, as they say. So keeping track and focusing on something should lead to improvement. Is that what's happening with companies when it comes to reporting on sustainability?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting. And we certainly see that quite a bit when it comes to ESG reporting. So if you're measuring it and you're reporting it, then we just assume that this is also being talked about and being managed. But, you know, what we've seen is a lot of pressure from, you know, policymakers, from regulators, more in Europe, I would say, than in North America at this point, but also from stock exchanges to have companies report on ESG issues. And it's great to report on these issues, but we've sort of seen the reporting driving the sustainability strategy. But where we think this will turn in the next few years, and certainly leading companies understand this, is that the sustainability strategy should be driving the reporting and not the other way around.
So we have to get the horse before the cart at this point.
Yeah.
Tamara, what role do ESG ratings providers play in all of this?
You know, there's so many different ESG rating providers out there. So it's very difficult to look at all these ratings and determine what is the sustainability of the company based on them. So what we generally recommend is think of them more as opinions than ratings, just like you would sort of sell side analysts that have opinions on different companies. But they definitely have a role to play on the investor side, and they are very influential. So for companies, when they're looking at their ESG ratings, first of all, I would suggest reaching out to these providers, finding out what your rating is and what you need to do to increase that rating.
Is there ever going to be a more consistent and standard way to measure ESG and sustainability elements? Are we ever going to get to that point?
I don't think we will get to that point. I think as we get more data from the companies and more reporting and more metrics, we will see maybe some sort of convergence between the different rating providers. But, you know, it makes sense to be looking at the sustainability of the company from different angles. And investors are doing this. They need to understand this. And companies understand this as well. So Probably not in the next few years. We may see some standardization around certain metrics. So for instance, greenhouse gas emissions, there's already some great protocols and methodologies and frameworks out there that pretty much everyone is using. But will we see it for all of the different metrics? Maybe, maybe not. And it's important too, when you look at these issues, to not look at them in isolation. A good example that I like to use is if you look at health and safety data from two different companies, and you might have one that has, you know, a metric that some companies report on is accidents or near misses. And if you're comparing two companies that otherwise are equal, and one has more accidents and near misses than another company, do you assume that company is managing that issue worse, or is the company just more transparent in how they're reporting and collecting this data? So you can't really look at these things in isolation. You have to take the whole big picture into account.
Seems like a lot of moving parts. Are there certain people or departments who keep track of a company's sustainability policies?
It varies. We've seen different things at different companies. And some of the challenges as well, how all of these different issues come into play for the strategy of a company. So for instance, if we're looking at what is the impact of climate change on a company, how will that impact the company's products and operations and physical locations, et cetera. This is very much about a risk management. So these are skill sets that you'd see probably with a CRO, so a chief risk officer. But then if you're looking at the company and the company's impact on, let's say, the environment, so how what they're doing in terms of recycling, what's their waste management policy, what's their energy consumption in their different locations, these are skill sets that sit probably more with a chief sustainability officer. You know, most companies are sort of aggregating this under probably a chief sustainability officer, but I think going forward, we'll see a lot of these different issues being parsed out and sitting in different groups within the company.
We're talking with Tamara Close, founder and managing partner of Close Group Consulting. Tamara, are companies putting more people on their boards who are in tune with sustainability issues so that they can exert more influence?
It's certainly being talked about. I would love to say that every board is doing it, but it's far from the truth. Even if we look at the NAECD, so the National Association for Corporate Directors in the U.S., this was in July, but they came up with their key points for 2022 for boards, and climate change did not even factor into that.
Ooh, that doesn't sound good.
It's sort of reflective of what boards are thinking. It's a challenge, of course, for boards. They do have right now, probably their mandate is more focused, and it is their mandate to increase the market value, the shareholder value of a company. So it's difficult for them to maybe allocate capital expenditures or spend on R&D and innovation towards something that may not, in their view, increase shareholder value. The good news is that more and more investors understand the link between the financial performance or resilience of a company and sustainability or ESG. So I think it's going to be easier for boards then to allocate capital towards sustainability initiatives and ESG initiatives at a company than ever before.
Many investors, I think, are more focused on the U.S. and North American companies, but how has globalization played a part in attitudes about sustainability and reporting?
Yeah, well, I think certainly since we've seen sort of the value chains of companies now being spread out across the world, they're now exposed potentially to certain risks in their supply chains that they did not have before. So we're seeing things like human rights issues, but also environmental issues popping out in supply chains. So companies have had to start to understand what these risks are and how to manage or mitigate them because they are getting, you know, pushback from stakeholders. So it's a much broader assessment that companies are now doing across the value chain of their operations instead of focusing just on where they're specifically located.
How is technology affecting that evolution?
Is playing a huge role, and it's impacting companies on a few different fronts. I think one of the first ways it's impacting companies and sustainability as a whole is it's giving us transparency into their operations that we never had before. So if a company today in North America or in the US has a controversy overseas or in an emerging market, we may not have heard about that even 10 years ago. But now with technology, with social media, and definitely with the increase in alternative data providers that will use artificial intelligence and machine learning to scrape news sources, very local news sources and websites, et cetera, we now have access to this information, and it's on a near real-time basis. And then on the flip side, there's also new technologies that are helping companies become more sustainable and also help report on these issues.
Do you have some examples about technology helping companies figure this out?
I mean, there's a lot of technologies out there, for instance, to help you capture the carbon that you're producing, operational efficiencies, using less water, producing less waste, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Wow. I think a lot of us have the impression that companies are in business strictly to make a buck, not to make the world a better place. Why is a good business for companies to do a better job of reporting on their sustainability practices?
Well, I think definitely that that's been the mandate of companies in the past. I think that the good thing is that when we look at sustainability ESG issues, some of them really do have the ability not only to impact the financial resilience of a company, but also to, you know, in your words, make the world a better place. So, and as I mentioned before, investors are understanding that link. So it will be easier for boards to implement some of these strategies that not only will help the resiliency of the company from a sustainability point of view, but also impact society and environment in a positive way.
As far as risk and returns go, I think many investors would like to align their personal views with their investment strategies, but they still have a tough time believing returns can match or top traditional investments.
I think they're definitely not mutually exclusive. I would say, you know, when we started speaking with investors 3 or 4 years ago, the question revolved around why do we need to do this? And now the questions they're asking is how do we do this? Because they've understood that link between the financial performance of their investments and sustainability. It still has an awful long way to go. And understanding that it's not just about risk mitigation necessarily right now, but also about leveraging those opportunities. And we're seeing it more and more, especially in the indexed world. So you have these sort of ESG or sustainability indexes that are acting as de facto rating agencies, if you will. So if you want to be part of these indices, you have to have a certain sustainability rating or reporting to get into these indices. So that's also having an impact on the return of investors' investments and portfolios.
What can investors do when they're looking for companies with good sustainability practices or avoiding companies that don't? Where do we do our research?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a really tough question right now. I would love to say that there's one source that you can go to get all of this information. In reality, it's a lot of work. It's great, you know, the companies, if they can report on this and put this on their website, that's, again, it's a lot of research they have to do, especially if you have a very large diversified portfolio. But that's really the legwork that you need to do. And then compare sort of metrics that the company's reporting on to understand how they're performing against other competitors. It's also really important to understand what the issues that a company should be looking at and reporting on. So investors also have to do their own materiality assessments to know and understand if a company has actually done that work and is reporting on those issues.
Don't some brokerage firms and advisors at this point have models where an investor can filter out various categories? For instance, if they don't want to invest in companies that make weapons or don't want to invest in a drug company that does animal testing or whatever.
Well, certainly, if we look at the different options that investors have, there's a slew of different ESG funds or sustainability funds. They all have different ways of looking at ESG or sustainability. So that's challenging for investors. So to your point, you could be looking at an ESG fund, whether it's guns or high carbon industries or sectors, and that will be called an ESG fund. Similarly, you could have a fund that invests only in companies that have at least 30% of women on board. So that is also an ESG fund, but with extremely different risk profiles. So it's challenging for investors to be able to sort through and understand what is the underlying ESG theme of this fund. On the bright side, we are seeing some standards coming out in the market. They're voluntary, but the CFA Institute has put out their standards for disclosures around ESG funds. So that came out last November. And hopefully that will put some standardization around the different different potential investment vehicles that investors can invest in, and also give some guidance to the investment firms that are putting out these funds and how they're describing them.
Well, talk can be cheap. What about companies that say all the right things in their reporting, but don't follow through with real action?
Definitely, investors are keeping track of this. For instance, when we teach investors how to assess a company, we look at three things: who is responsible and who is accountable for the implementation of that policy. So just having a policy is one thing, but also having an implementation framework, that's one thing. And then what's the governance and oversight to track adherence to the policy? And then, is the policy being referenced in other company policies, or is it a standalone policy? Those are the three things that we'll look at. So if those are being tracked, then you have a bit more comfort.
So when it's more talk and little action on sustainability, that's called greenwashing, right?
It's really about, how do we identify that companies are doing what they say that they're doing? That's greenwashing, right? You can maybe try to do it and it doesn't succeed, but saying you're doing something and not doing anything about it is sort of my definition, I would say, of greenwashing.
Are there certain companies or industries that have really impressed you in how they've adapted and gone about reporting their sustainability policies and results?
It's a great question. We're seeing a lot of movement in these sort of high carbon, hard to decarbonize industries with a lot of ESG issues like energy and mining, et cetera. The world is not getting to a net zero global economy unless these sectors and industries get there. So these companies, they're facing survival for their business models. So they have a lot of work to do. And I think the companies that have impressed me most within these industries understand that they have these risks, are embracing these risks, and are making these risks transparent. So one of the issues you have in some of the oil and gas firms is called stranded assets, right? You have assets on your balance sheet, which will now be worth zero. And so we've seen firms actually identifying which assets they believe will be stranded assets. And that's huge because it's impacting the valuations of their firms immediately. But the markets reacted positively to that because the market understands that some of these assets will be stranded. So instead of just saying that none of this will happen, or we're not going to report on it, or we're going to avoid the issue, there are companies out there that are just taking this risk head on. And I think that's a very brave and transparent and great way for these companies to be managing these risks.
So by stranded assets, you're referring, say, in the energy business to a depleted or obsolete oil well that's still on the books and the company's stuck with it.
Right. So it's not necessarily depleted. It actually could be full, the oil well. It's just that there will not be as much demand or such a decreased demand for it, or since the technology changed, that they'll have to write these assets off.
Well, I imagine there are some companies and industries, say some banks, for example, where the bank doesn't even understand what the ESG and sustainability issues are and needs someone to interpret the data for them. And that's where you come in.
Yes, absolutely. And it's about widening their lens, if you will, or the aperture of their lens to the different issues that they should be looking at before they make an investment or a loan or finance a certain company. So what are potential risks that that company could have and that could impact their investment in that company?
I suppose listeners can get more information about Close Group Consulting and about you, Tamara, at your website?
Absolutely, yes.
So that's Close Group Consulting. As if it's one word, .com. We've been talking to Tamara Close, founder and managing partner of Close Group Consulting. Thanks so much for being with us today, Tamara.
Thank you for inviting me. Happy to be here.
By the way, you can register to receive the Socially Inspired Investor Digest and podcast. There's no fee. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. This podcast is copyrighted by Seasons of Advice Wealth Management. It is published and provided for informational and entertainment purposes only, and not for individualized investment advice. Please go to our website, soawealth.com, for additional information. We'll be back next time with more ESG stories in focus and another deep dive discussion and companion articles in the Socially Inspired Investor Digest. Our podcast mission is to make socially inspired and ESG investing more consumer-friendly and achievable. This is the Socially Inspired Investor.